Hello and welcome in to New Track Record live from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Fan Fest here tonight at Electric Works in Fort Wayne. Caleb Hatch, Justin Kinney, and a random car horn in the background.
Just when we start the show. Random car horn.
Yes. Excellent stuff. We're back this week. A much needed week off. Last week, we'll not get into that. We'll not bore you with the details. But
it was an interesting week, to say the least,
yes,
for both of us.
It was. But we're back, and we have an interesting week, to say the least.
That we do. On and off the track.
Yes. So we obviously have Scott Dixon winning a thrilling, hard to believe that, but a thrilling Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach, the 49th edition overall, so next year the 50th. Sold out reserve seats for the second year in a row. Biggest crowd, they're saying, post-merger, so yeah. Since 2008. All good stuff. But we're going to talk about Long Beach second, because we have other news. Massive penalty in IndyCar.
The biggest penalty in IndyCar history? I mean,
perhaps.
Do we know the last time somebody has been stripped of a victory in the sport? I don't.
I certainly don't.
I'm sure it's happened, but not anytime soon. Recently.
So, Team Penske set with some massive penalties over push-to-pass use. So massive that Joseph Newgarden had his win stripped away. Scott McLaughlin had his third place stripped away as well. Both those drivers disqualified. Then Will Power, 10-point loss. Team Penske also, all three entries fined, what, $25,000 each? So you're talking about a penalty. It's approaching, what, like $150,000 when you're or more when you're talking the prize money also, because you get, what, 50 to win, and is it like 30 or 35 for a third? So, I mean, this is a massive penalty. And at first, you know, you look at it, it's like, wow, this is shocking. And then you're like, well, wait, how did IndyCar not know in terms of, you know, Penske using push to pass on starts and restarts? That's the accusation. Joseph Newgarden using it for, what, 9 seconds during the St. Pete race? This is a huge deal, especially when you kind of dive into the aftermath, because, you know, Will Power, outside of the 10-point penalty, he comes off looking great because he didn't use it in the race.
Right. At least when he wasn't supposed to.
Integrity not in question, at least for St. Pete. Obviously, this whole thing was caught during warm-up at Long Beach. So you have a long delay. It all goes back to, what, August of 2023 hybrid test.
So let's break down first what we know about this entire situation. We know that the three Penske drivers had access to push to pass on the start and restarts when they shouldn't have had that access. We know that it was a software issue or a line of software that was not deleted, whatever. Was the application of it malicious initially? Doesn't sound like it. But where you get into a problem is when, in the race, Penske drivers using this, whether they used it 3 seconds or 30 seconds or 90 seconds.
Or one second.
Knowing that they had it. It is a 50 horsepower boost?
Yes.
You know when you're on push to pass. And we know that two of the three drivers used it at St. Pete, which makes them complicit in breaking the rules. Because not only did they use it, they then didn't tell anyone that they used it. And that's, I think, where we're at in terms of what we know. How deep it goes, right? We can get into conspiracy theories and deep state theories about how this goes all the way up to Roger Penske and the sanctity of the sport, and the whole sport is ruined and compromised. I mean, you can go down that road, but I think when you look at the complicit parties, at least in my opinion, you go Scott McLaughlin, Joseph Newgarden, Tim Cindric. Those are the three that, to me, have a hard time explaining away that they didn't know that this was a thing.
Yes, and we didn't even get to the point that McLaren actually finally won a race. Their first.
Well, you know, they got to back into winning a race. You know, it's the only way McLaren can win a race in this series, apparently.
So Pato Award gets the win. The first win for him since, of course, Newgarden had that shock failure at Iowa Race 2. This win comes 45 days of race. But
he's also said, hey, you can send that trophy over.
We'll tell you about that a bit later during a very fun Tweets of the Week.
There's many Tweets of the Week this week.
Of the program this week. But so let's go back because there are videos, and Jennifer and I are pointing this out. Videos from 2022 that were going out there, people questioning, you know, why Scott McLaughlin pushing, you know, the push to pass button, you know, when it was not allowed in qualifying, and that was kind of like a since debunked. But then there are other things that were called into question last season. Chevrolet saying, hey, we don't have anything to do with
Chevrolet is distancing themselves from this.
Yeah, they're trying, but here's the reality. And Marshall Pruitt of Racer.com has an excellent article into a lot of technical things we don't understand.
Yes.
Reading it, I got it. I don't know how to explain it to you, but basically the Chevy engineers can look at this data and notice the RPM ranges. They didn't notice it, that, or they ignored it. Let's consider all the possibilities.
Yeah.
Penske basically had an override on the on-off switch for this CLU, as it is known.
Yeah.
And you look at what they did, and somehow they came up with an override for push to pass. That's essentially the accusation here. Now, Penske's saying, we left it on from hybrid testing, and then it was on for St. Pete. This didn't matter in terms of thermal, right? Because you could use
push to pass. You could use it on starts and restarts, yes.
So that's their story. Now, the thing that I have a hard time with, beyond the fact that Joseph Newgarden's been silent and he'll have a press conference, so we're recording this Thursday night. He'll have a press conference Friday of Barber Weekend, so coming up tomorrow as we record. The biggest thing to me is that you look at this and the issue is, well, they're not really admitting guilt here.
Right.
They're like apologizing and saying,
this is like, why it wasn't cheating.
Yeah.
Like it's basically
saying,
what they're trying
to say. I
want
to be clear, I did not gain an advantage over my competitors, but
you did.
You look at the tape and he did. I mean, Nathan Brown said McLaughlin went from 9th to 6th after turn one of lap number one.
You had access to something that nobody else had.
And there's a reason, just like in F1, you can't use DRS, right, on the start of the race for a couple laps and on restarts.
So two laps, right?
It's the same thing in IndyCar, and it feels like we have a thing here where, quite honestly, the data has to be really bad for there to be nothing further released at this point.
Well, I think partly I have a hard time looking at Chevy and saying they're complicit. I don't know how. Yes, they say they go over those numbers and data and stuff. But, you know, am I going to place blame on Chevy? No, not really. I think, you know, the sentence or the phrase in Marshall Pruitt's article, and again, check it out on racer.com. It goes into a lot of detail, too much detail for you and I. But this was the statement of the story that really jumped out to me. He said, quote, this is a black eye for Roger Penske, Tim Cindric, Joseph Newgarden, Scott McLaughlin, and the series. And I mentioned the series because this should have been caught by the series earlier. He goes on to say, decisions were made to bypass the push-to-pass rules, and there were far too many people who plug into the cars and see the data to claim it was a simple software mistake, which is what Tim Cindric is claiming. Oh, there was a line of code in there from August that didn't get deleted. Be the reason why initially it was there, but you cannot prove to anyone that with how detail-oriented Team Penske is that nobody noticed that. And the drivers, after even in driving at St. Pete, go, whoa, I just pushed the pass button and I got 58 extra HP. None of them said anything. That's my thing, is just admit your guilt here.
Yes.
Okay? You can give us the runaround. This was a concerted effort to, once a violation was caught, we ignored it and eventually got caught. And now you have an article that at least one of them brought up last year about potential issues. I have a hard time looking at it and saying, Honda's, oh my gosh, a Chevy team has skirted a rule and Chevy is complicit with me, which means Roger Penske is complicit, and why do we want to compete in a league in which the entire thing is compromised? I mean, it's not like Chevy is going out and winning race after race after race after race after race. Honda just won this past weekend. Honda won, 12 of the 13 road and street courses last year?
So, yeah.
Yes, Napa's 500, which a lot of both manufacturers put higher than the series championship for sure. But I don't think there's the brain trust at Honda Performance Development are all of a sudden saying we got to get ice because Chevy is cheating. I don't see that.
This is the drama, right, that F1's able to sell. Well, IndyCar now has that element added on.
And that said, because we know how much Roger Penske loves to control the narrative, how much of this is thrown into 100 Days to Indy? I think it's a legitimate question. I don't think you can sweep it under the rug. I don't think Roger Penske can look at it and say, my series, my team, we're not going to do that. Because I think 100 Days to Indy, if there was anything to the detriment of that, it was we're not going to put anything remotely controversial in there. And this is very controversial. And you would hope it's included in 100 Days to Indy. You see it, that's what brings in the drama for Drive to Survive. I kind of look at it and people saying, well, we don't want to be F1, talking about IndyCar. Well, you should in this regard, because drama sells. And IndyCar rarely has drama. And here's drama with two of the best drivers in the sport and one of the top teams in the sport.
And the other thing, so we've kind of talked about, well, how are they responding? And Tim Cindric, so Nathan Brown of IndyStar, asked this question. He says the software error, again, that DQ'd McLaughlin and Newgarden goes back to hybrid testing August of 2023. Engineers copy-pasted the setup file. That's the CLU that we're talking about with the code. And then Brown said, he's trying to say it's normal for them to hit the button when push to pass is off. But as soon as a fan pointed out to him, look, as soon as Newgarden and McLaughlin activated the button, they're complicit. They knew what was happening. And that's the thing I can't wrap my head around. Like, they can blame a software thing that they forgot to swap out. But the reality is, Will Power had access to this, and he didn't do it, right? And he still got a penalty because it is still cheating, right? But he didn't take advantage of an unfair advantage. Funny we're talking about Penske in that.
Right.
Now, he didn't take advantage where the other two drivers, they knew what they were doing. And I guess that's the part I can't excuse, no matter what you talk about in this situation.
It's not a defense, but maybe something that needs to be tightened up, because they have access to push to pass in practice, correct?
In warm-up.
So okay,
that's
so
where this was discovered.
So it keeps going back and forth on turning it on, turning it off, getting a piece of code in, taking a line of code out. It seems like eventually something like this was going to happen. Now, you would hope that the series or teams in the series would be like, hey, we have access to this and we shouldn't. And this is what I can't get past is for drivers. Let's start with drivers, and then we'll start about team members. For drivers that feel every little thing in a car, that micromanage every single thing that goes on with their car, and same thing with team members and crew, you cannot tell me getting a 50% boost when you're not supposed to have it is not felt by the drivers, okay? You can say, well, it's just they're used to hitting it on starts and restarts. Well, if they're used to it and it works, isn't that something that they would bring to the attention of Tim Cindric? And that's why you cannot convince me, no matter what they say, that they did not know that they had access to this at St. Pete.
And that's what this all comes back to, right?
And throwing the series a little under the bus is the fact that Team Penske had an issue in warm-up to then how this was discovered. This could have very well continued through Long Beach. And nobody would have known. And that's why
it could have continued through road and street course races throughout the course of the season. Now, they've apparently rectified the situation with the signal that turned on and off, pushed to pass, and changed how they're going to do stuff starting at Barber.
Right.
So that's good. Hopefully we don't run into this again. But I get the point to say, well, how could Indy not catch this? And I understand that. That's not the story here.
No, I think the story is a team knowingly cheated. It didn't go out of its way to cheat, but what it did was it found it had an advantage and did not come clean up. Everything is just hearsay
just
until I have more evidence that that Chevy was involved and Roger Penske was involved. And that's what I think kudos needs to be given to Jay Fry, is as soon as this was discovered, the leadership of IndyCar went to work. It didn't matter that their boss is the owner of this team, they hammered them. Imagine the outcry if Roger or if Joseph Newgarden's win wasn't stripped. And because not everybody, but some people love it. Every little inkling of Team Penske having an advantage is, well, of course they do, because Roger Penske runs the series. Here's kudos to Jay Fry and the IndyCar leadership to say that has no bearing on the punishment that we've given out. And Roger Penske, too, strangely silent, of which he should be, Chip Cindric should be dealing with.
So I don't think we'll see anything from Chip, but
Chip doesn't want to ruffle the
Bobby. What does Michael?
Feathers.
What does Zach?
I get it that it impacts the integrity of the sport, but I think IndyCar has at least gotten in front of this. Maybe they should have. I think they should have known this earlier, but they've gotten in front of it when they've needed to and done the right things. I think too. What it questions? You know, when you look at the golden boy of IndyCar, that's Joseph Newgarden.
Yes.
What does this do for his fan base, for people's approach to Joseph Newgarden? And I'll be fascinated to see it. I use my dad as an example, the biggest Joseph Newgarden fan around, that he says, you know, kind of bums him out that this is going on. So what does it do to both Scott McLaughlin and Joseph Newgarden in terms of their, I guess,
their image.
Their
if you will.
Yeah,
their
image.
Is that still a thing?
And then Team Penske itself.
I think the other aspect is you're talking about a driver in Newgarden who is squeaky clean, right? Like you called him the golden boy. He's squeaky clean. This is a massive kind of dent, and for him to not put out a statement right away was surprising. I don't know if his press conference is going to be a prepared statement, if it's going to be him doing a Q&A, which, I mean, props him if that's what he's going to do. But this really, really kind of hurts his image, and he's, in a way, become the villain.
And we'll see if he's treated as such at races, which you and I would love. This series needed villains. Did we ever think Joseph Newgarden would be going to be that villain? No.
No.
But here we are. And I think regardless of what Joseph Newgarden says on Friday, again, we're recording this Thursday evening, is he is now in the crosshairs in terms of people questioning him. Is it fair to question every win that Joseph Newgarden's had with Team Penske? No. But it brings up that conversation.
Well, and you look at how dominant, you know, he's been at races over the years. Now, granted, a lot of those are short ovals, so you're not talking about push to pass for the most part. I know they've tried that out right before, but it's just, do we question the credibility? Like, I'm not questioning the credibility of his 500 win.
I'm not, but some people
will. But some people will.
Even though push to pass isn't
exactly.
On a, you know?
And to be clear, that's unfair.
Right.
Like, you can question race control and how they manipulated the ending of that race last year, but you can't question the win and what he did on the track. But for other races, obviously, you can put that into question.
I'm not ready to go that far. I don't think it goes that deep, but some people will bring that up. Maybe I'm a sucker. I don't know. I just hard time buying into this thing being any deeper than what we know now.
Yeah, it's isolated to one team.
Well, and even
one
like
team only at the moment.
I have a hard time saying, oh, this goes back throughout last year and the year before and the year before. And
until we know otherwise.
Until we know otherwise, I have a hard time buying
it. It goes back to August 23 hybrid testing and leave it at that.
But Tim Cindric and Scott McLaughlin and maybe Joseph Newgarden trying to say, we didn't get much of an advantage, if any, can deflect as much as you want, but Team Penske had an advantage at St. Pete than no other team had.
Any closing thoughts on everything? I feel like we've said it all.
Yeah, I just I know there's a lot of conspiracy theories and how this damages the series and the sport, and oh my gosh, the entire integrity of the sport is in question now. I'm not ready to go down that road.
I'm not either. Meanwhile, Scott Dixon, he went out and did something. I think we both agree no other driver in the series is capable of doing. That is his fuel saving. And, you know, we've always kind of wondered over the years, why is Dixon so good? This skill is something that simply can't be replicated in today's IndyCar.
I don't know if it was in the mailbag this week or what, but basically, if you remember, 2005, Toyota was a crap wagon. It had no speed. It was like it wasn't Lotus-able, but it was bad, okay?
It was.
And the only way for Ganassi and Scott Dixon to be competitive that year was fuel mileage and fuel. He learned over the course of an entire season how to maximize fuel mileage and fuel save in order to be competitive with the Toyota. And with the limited amount of testing you have now, difficult for other drivers to figure out tricks of the trade. I know NBC was trying to hype up Herta's ability to potentially pass Scott Dixon late. Unless Scott Dixon ran out of gas, Colton Herta was not winning that race. Because the two turns, the fountain, I felt like, and particularly the hairpin, is Scott Dixon off those very, very
his
quickly.
His launch was impressive.
Yes, his launch was impressive.
He never won at Long Beach. This, to me, and I get it, it's recency bias. This, to me, though, felt like one of, if not the impressive wins in his entire IndyCar career.
To the people's point calling me out, yes, it's another win. What is it, four of six
points races.
Points races in winning. I will own that for sure, but he definitely put exclamation point on his career. Just another one with that win at Long Beach.
All right, so I guess we're out of rhythm, right? We do our three things, so I guess Dixon is our number one for both.
I think
of
Dixon
us, right?
is our number one. So if we went our number two for you, what would it be?
How Colton Herta?
Okay. Is he the points leader now? Back to back
seconds. Second behind
second,
Dixon.
Third? Okay.
So he has two podiums to start the season. I feel like Andretti's just a different team this year. And to be clear, I felt this in the preseason with the addition of Ericsson going from four to three cars. It's a tighter ship, right? Herta's refocused. They moved his dad off the stand, and now it's Rob Edwards. I feel like he's in a rhythm. I think a race win is going to happen, whether it's Barber, Indy Road Course, Indy 500, who knows. But it just, that team is so much stronger. Kyle Kirkwood wasn't really a factor, still moved up to seventh. Like, that team is at a level, and I think because Colton Herta leadership duties and really settled into that role for the first time.
Well, yeah, so far I'm not ready to say, oh, they have it all figured out and stuff after two races, but I will say that that he's definitely been a factor the first couple races of the season. Can this team consistently get wins? That remains to be seen. Mm-hmm. But Colton Herta has been there. You also wonder, though, is if Colton Herta can't capitalize on his opportunities, because this team has a tendency to completely miss setups sometimes, or have mechanicals, have issues, sometimes have bad luck. At least at Long Beach, Colton Herta was in position to win a race and didn't. Is this team, and Colton Herta in particular, turned a page to where they could consistently be there? Or are they not maximizing their opportunities when they do have a chance to win a race?
So Herta is my number one. Just, he's been impressive to start the season after a couple of back-to-back 10th place finishes in the points last two seasons. He is showing, again, still just 24. We always forget that, right?
Right.
He's been in the series so long.
Seasoned veteran at 24 years old.
He's just 24, and I'm not saying he's going to win the championship this year. That's a stretch. But he's back to the level we expected him to be at, and I think that's a big step forward.
At least through the first two races, yes.
Right. Well, and even thermal, right? They did something wacky and made something happen. What's your two?
I'm going to go with Taylor Chair.
Nice, yes.
Because I think he stole the hearts of McLaren, that's for sure, over the weekend. Now all of a sudden we're talking through one race and he's going to be the full-time driver of McLaren and all this. But from all indications, he endeared himself to the team. The rookie F2, reigning F2 champion, did a great job. Started 22nd in the race and finished 11th. And was just a phenomenal drive from beginning to end. And so it was really, really impressive what Teo Porcher did in terms of coming in. And you felt like as long as he could finish and not put it in the wall, that it was a good weekend. And for him to not do that and finish 11th was absolutely impressive. And I don't know if I'm ready to crown him, because it sounds like other people are. Oh my gosh, Malukas is screwed. And he's going to be the guy. He's going to be the guy at Barber, and we'll see where it goes. But I am going to say a dude that with no IndyCar experience whatsoever to come in and have the drive that he did at a road course like that, or a street course where there is zero to next to zero run on him, is absolutely impressive.
And Joey Barnes, Motor Motorsports.com. I could write up saying that Porcher said a full-time Uvi car is an option. Again, he's the Sauber reserve guy. He'll be in the car at Barber, as you mentioned. He could end up doing a lot of the road and street courses the rest of the season, depending on schedule conflicts. I mean, when you're a reserve driver, there's just a lot of sitting around outside of some P1 practice
sessions. Yeah, I mean, what are you getting other than latter in the season, an FP1 appearance is basically what's going to happen. My question, I thought about this yesterday, and it would have been a good poll question, maybe we still do it on Twitter, is who has the most starts this season in a McLaren car? Callum Ilott, David Malukas, or Teo Porcher?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Because I don't think we know the answer.
Yeah,
right
no,
now.
I don't think we do. I think it's complete. You know what? I'm going to be optimistic and say Malukas. I think he returns in the 500. Now, the understanding, the latest on his health, is the pins were supposed to move from his wrist yesterday. So on Wednesday, April 24th. So if that's the case and things are healing and progressing,
I think there's a chance
the Indy 500 is a possibility. But I would say the Indy GP is out.
Yeah.
I think the Indy 500 is the earliest we see him back in the
car. I think that's the issue from what we understand is it's not healing the way it's supposed to be healing.
They did like the stem cell therapy to you know, help things out. It's not like, I think the thing all misunderstood on this injury early on, more related to the tendon, it can heal quickly, it can heal slowly, and unfortunately for him, it's healing slowly.
And from what we understand, it's on a one-year contract with a team option for a second year. If Teo Porcher continues to perform the way he is, I think he's going to finish top 11 in every season. But if he endears himself to the team, which it sounds like he did, he was almost a...
they love him.
Oh, yeah. It's like a breath of fresh air, apparently, to McLaren, is when you have the no personality of Alexander Rossi is kind of like you look at it. And I'm serious. Like, it's just... It was just a breath of fresh air. Now,
they love Malukas too, though. That's the thing.
They do. But if Porcher continues to perform the way he has been, and granted, it's just one race, folks, but if he can continue to do that at Barber and beyond, Malukas is screwed.
Yes.
He may get his seat this year, but he is quickly going to be usurped by Porcher for 2025 if this continues to go in the direction. If something opens at Sauber and Porcher is first there, obviously that'd be a thing. F2 as the reigning champion. Its champion only gets you so much. If he can perform an IndyCar and continue to have opportunities of solve.
Aspect of all of this with Porcher is I'm impressed outside of what? He had one brush with the wall the whole weekend? Yeah. I mean, that's an impossible ask. And how he performed, can't help but be impressed.
I thought, okay, the start is going to get him. Something's going to happen. But he survived the start. Granted, he didn't have to do a lot of restarts. There was just one restart with one yellow, so that helped him. But, man, for what he did on race day was absolutely very impressive. He's my number two. What is your number three
take? My number three, so I've gone back and forth between a couple different teams, but I'm going to stick with Meyer-Shank Racing. On the one hand, first pole for the team, Felix Rosenqvist's qualifying pace has been phenomenal, right? I mean, second at St. Pete. He was what, second at Thermal? Is that right?
Yeah, I think
and
so.
And then pole at Long Beach, obviously. That's the good, he was first in his group at Thermal.
Okay.
But so that's the good side. The bad side is he had a brake issue. He started on used blacks, so that's why the pace probably wasn't there right away. And just the problem is that they don't have race pace. And as great as their qualifying pace has been early in the season, their race pace has not. And I guess you can blame the brake issue for the bulk of that at Long Beach. And he did recover. Like, he recovered for a top 10 finish. He finished ninth. But
yeah, but after starting
at
pole,
some point, they got to put the race pace together. And they simply struggled with that all season.
And even last year, that was the problem.
Yeah.
I don't think we look at McLaren and we say the problem is qualifying, because I think they qualify well. You look at a person like Graham Rahal and you say, okay, problem is qualifying. That's not a problem, McLaren. Race day pace.
You mean Meyer-Shank.
Or Meyer-Shank, excuse me. But you look at Meyer-Shank and you say race day pace has been an issue. But comparatively to what they were the last 2 years, particularly last year, the first two races, you can't ask for much more, because already Felix Rosenqvist has given this team an injection of energy and being competitive. All due respect to Simon Pagenaud and Elio Castroneves. Elio, we knew when he went to that team full-time that he wasn't going to be a consistent contender week in and week out. He's just not, and that's not a knock on Elio. That was just where he was in his career, and we know why he got that full-time ride. It's because he won his fourth Indianapolis 500. We get it. And even Simon Pagenaud struggled. We hope he's not done in the seat. He may very well be after his accident. What, Mid-Ohio?
Yeah.
And who knows? But through two races, the best off-season acquisition is Felix Rosenquist at Meyer Shank. And I don't think anybody can argue that.
Yes, your number three.
Oh, my number three. Let's talk about the event. And I guess the dichotomy between what it means to Long Beach and what it means to, I would say, NBC. Because we saw this race get absolutely horrible ratings on USA. But let's talk about the positives. And you mentioned it at the jump of the podcast. The biggest, arguably the biggest post-unification crowd in Long Beach event history.
That's what they said. And again, second year in a row, they sold out of reserve seats.
You have to think that that will be a usurp next year for the 50th. But
yeah.
This is, and let's count our blessings, because just a couple weeks ago, we were freaking out about this event potentially going, could it be a NASCAR event? Could it be a Formula One event?
All for nothing.
And no. And I think this reinforced our opinion of how important this race is to the IndyCar series. The second biggest race on the calendar, and it's not even close. People will throw in Road America. You can throw in this, that, or the other. Nashville, even when it's downtown. No. This is the biggest event outside of the Indianapolis 500. And it should be treated as such by the broadcaster, of which it wasn't. Buried on USA, the lead-in was Chucky. The show? Yes. Was it the show or the movie? I don't even know.
The movie, I believe.
The movie. I don't know which Chucky
it
was.
A minute early, because I actually had the pre-race on.
I saw the... you actually watched the pre-race, really.
Well, I had it on, but I was tracking stuff for my day job to transition.
Okay.
On the radio from our minor league baseball game, that wrapping up to our IndyCar coverage, and so I was just trying to track everything, see where we were at.
But, gotcha. But yeah, the end was terrible. The rating was terrible, 307,000. I'm sure we'll get to it. So you have an event that shows that it's the second biggest event on the schedule, and then I'm not really blaming. I have a hard time blaming IndyCar, because the event date is largely set by the promoter. And you're not messing with Long Beach.
No.
So when you do that, and then you have NBC that says, no, we're not going to broadcast it because XYZ, which I don't know what was on NBC proper.
Well, I can tell you. So they had the LPGA Chevron Championship. It was the most watched of that event since 2010. Listen to this, Justin. The final round on Sunday on NBC and Peacock peaked nearly 1.9 million viewers. Overall, 936,000 viewers, which is what a typical IndyCar race gets. That's what was on NBC and prevented...
So it got an average of 900-some thousand?
Yeah. That's what prevented IndyCar from being on NBC.
Now, here's the... And this is where it's like, who do you go after to blame? Because so many people will blame NBC.
But they have contracts.
And look, that they peaked at 1.9 million. If you put Long Beach on NBC, is it peaking at 1.9 million?
Probably not.
The average was a little under a million. Last year, the Long Beach race on NBC got a touch over a million.
Correct.
So you're looking at comparable.
1.026.
Yeah, so you're looking at comparable ratings. So is it NBC we need to blame? Or is this just where the series is? Is they're going to pick an LPGA final round event over IndyCar because it's going to get bigger ratings or comparable ratings?
And the bad part in all this, NASCARman_RR, who has a lot of great motorsports content on Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it these days. So a 0.17 TV rating, again, 307,000 viewers. That is among races since 2013 held on a Sunday, unaffected by weather, according to him. Only one race had a lower rating. That was 2015 Mid-Ohio, which got a 0.15. But as he points out, that was on CNBC. Remember that was the race on CNBC, and then it... They replayed it on NBCSN later, and it got like what was it? For some reason, the number in my head was 642,000, which is massive.
Yeah,
And that was for Graham Rahal's win at Mid-Ohio, which is obviously a very popular win and a very great race that year as well. And so, like, effectively, because I'm not holding that CNBC thing here, like, that was a special circumstance.
Right. This was a regularly scheduled IndyCar event.
It was on a typical network. IndyCar would be on that CNBC race, obviously. That would happen once, what, every, like, year or two?
Yeah.
They'd have some crazy conflict. Like, this is bad. There's no other way to put it.
It's embarrassingly bad. And this is my thing, is if your second biggest event on the schedule can't get on network television, then maybe that other suitor, you're better off going with that one.
Yeah, it's simple.
It's my thing. And I think being on USA, and we're seeing the trend now from 1 year to the next, more races going on USA. Are we going to continue to have 3, 4, 5, 6 races on USA? It's a death sentence. There is no casual sports viewer stumbling upon USA to watch sports. And this is my thing. In FS1, we were trading tech. You're good for an extra, what, 200, 250,000 just being on FS1 as opposed to USA? Because it's in your sports grouping.
Yes.
As opposed to USA, and you're just dead on arrival. And you can point the finger at IndyCar. You can point the finger at NBC. There's plenty of blame to go around, but what I just look, if you have a partner that's going to value your sport and your second biggest event more than what NBC is currently doing, then you have to go with them. I think, if anything, a great indication that IndyCar needs to go in a different direction with its over-the-air partner.
I would fully agree. Any other notes or takeaways? I did see that the Graham Rahal, it wasn't a fuel issue, it was a crew issue. Same for Pietro Fittipaldi. I think Kevin DeJewski pointed that out on Twitter.
Well, it's
he threw away a top five.
So it was a fueler issue. It was
the
a human
fueler,
being
Yeah, human
issue.
Being pit crew issue.
Human error, which that's what separates, and this is what it comes down to. This is what separates the middling teams to the good teams and the good teams from the great teams, is human error that comes down to either pit issues, mechanicals, or driver error. That's what separates. That's why there's only two teams in this series that can win championships, is things like that. And that's what's holding back Rahal, Letterman, Lanigan from consistently competing with Andretti and McLaren. And that's what's holding back Andretti and McLaren to competing with Penske and Ganassi. It's simple.
All right. We also apparently have another race coming up this week.
Oh, we do. Yes, indeed.
Our three key stats: 10 of 13 Barber races won by a driver starting inside the top five. Dixon, 9 podium finishes. Only driver to finish inside the top 10 in every race, but he's never won. Never started in the front row as well. Only led a total of 46 laps. Only driver to complete every lap in all 13 races. 12 of 13 Firestone Fast Sixes there, but again, never started in the front row. And Will Power, 10 top fives and 13 starts. Only started on the front row 8 times, 2 wins, 215 laps led. Only one other driver is more than 60 laps led. Okay. All that said, I can't pick against Joseph Newgarden this weekend. It's his track.
It is his track.
Outside of Iowa, his track.
I could see him facing the criticism over the next couple days and then coming out and just winning in dominant fashion. You go Joseph Newgarden. I will go Alex Palou to win at Barber.
Did he not win there? Was it last year?
I do believe he won there
and
last year.
And obviously won there his first championship season as well.
Yes.
So your schedule for IndyCar at Barber and on big NBC, which is good. Hopefully that helps the TV rating for the weekend.
That's another thing, because you and I both noticed that on the USA broadcast, they didn't advertise Barber at all.
Until literally closing credits, signing off.
I remember at some point during the race, Lee Diffie mentioning that we had a race at Barber coming up, and like 7 of the next 8 weekends are have Indy cars on track. I think James Hinchcliffe, but in the bottom right, you had the Indianapolis 500 being previewed or teased. You had the Kentucky Derby being teased. Nothing about Barber. It's just terrible, terrible promotion by NBC, and it's just another indication to you and I that they're just cashing it in at this point.
The schedule for the weekend, again, all times we're telling you are Eastern, Peacock, IndyCar Live, SiriusXM, IndyCar Radio. Practice 1 on Friday, 3:40 to 4:55 in the afternoon. Practice 2, 12:15 to 1:15. Qualifying, 3:30 to 5. And then on Sunday, the warm-up from 10:15 to 10:45 in the morning. And then on Sunday, the TV window from 1 to 4, NBC and Peacock. In terms of the weekend schedule, the green flag, somewhere around 1:30 or so. We'd love for you to interact with us. Again, you can always find us at SneakTrackCreditPodcast.com. There you can check out the store, T-shirts and stickers for sale. You can also sign up for the email list. It is free. You won't miss episodes, any special announcements as well. Free to subscribe. Also, on social media, IndyCar Podcast, Instagram, on Twitter / X, Facebook, just search for New Track Record. Email newtrackrecordpodcast@gmail.com, patreon.com/newtrackrecord. And as always, download podcast and listen on your favorite podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Music. That's the replacement for Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Player FM. Again, wherever you listen to podcasts and listen in for free. All right, so for the mailbag this week, we have so many entries. We're gonna really make it succinct.
Okay.
Rate the race. We'll start with that. We had 24 entries alone for rate the race.
Very nice, folks. Good job.
How would you rate Long Beach?
I had it as a 7.5, which is kind of lower than everybody else had. Yes.
Why?
One, there was not a pass for the lead late.
Well, there was early, though.
No, but I agree. But there was no pass for the lead late.
Okay.
Only one caution. I felt like there could have been more drama with more cautions.
Yeah, you never would have expected, one caution for four laps at Long Beach? I would not. You had a pass for the lead on track. You had great drama throughout. And I just thought it's all you ask for out of a Long Beach race, which usually you're not getting those kind of things. Rate the race was an 8.2. So
okay,
pretty good.
Higher than me. I think everybody was hiring me.
And we're joined by a special guest, the president of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Doug Bowles, joining us in person. First off, thanks for IMS doing this great event. Is this your first time at Electric Works?
It is my first time at Electric Works. I get to Fort Wayne quite a bit, but this is my first time here. What a great place.
So I saw you stopped at a pretty cool spot in Justin's stomping grounds in Huntington on
yes.
your way up
yep.
here. At what's it called, Motorama?
Yeah, we went to the Drummonds. Barb and Dan Drummond have a place that's got all kinds of really cool cars, and he's built kind of a main street in it inside this big warehouse with some buildings. It was really cool to see. We stopped and had a tenderloin at the place that's supposed to be the
Nick's.
The birth of the breaded pork tenderloin. So we did that. We've been to the 122nd Airborne, saw those folks. We went to Vera Bradley. It's been a fun day. Went to the GM plant because all our trucks come from that plant. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, let's talk Indy 500. We're basically a month out, which is hard to believe. Anticipation's building. A lot of talk about potentially selling out of reserve seats. Where do things stand on that front?
I hope we do. We are close to 15,000 tickets above where we were last year at this point in time, and we continue to sell more tickets day over day than we did last year, so that's exciting. I just think it says a lot about the facility. It says a lot about our fans and how excited they are to bring friends back and family back, and you know, Roger's allowed us to invest a lot in the customer experience, and I think that helps. So we'll see what happens really over the next 10 or 15 days as we lead in, but we got 31 to go, so we'll see where we end up.
You've done this quite a few times now, Doug. You've done a great job at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. What still keeps Doug Bowles up at night a month away from the Indianapolis 500? I think because other than it seems like you cover everything except the weather. That's always the great unknown. But is there anything else that kind of keeps you?
Gates are never as good as gates could be. Traffic's never as good as traffic could be. You've got concession lines that could always be shorter. I mean, so those are the things that you really try and focus on in every year to try and incrementally make them better. A lot of it you can't control. Traffic. If there's an accident somewhere, that screws up the whole system. But really, to work through that, we've made some changes on our traffic pattern from last year that I think will make it a little bit easier. So those are the things that keep me up. Weather keeps me up because you can't control
can't
it.
Control,
and not
yeah.
not the rain. I don't worry about the rain. If it rains and we move on to later in the day or the next day. What I worry about is, thunderstorm, lightning, things that are a potential danger for all of us at the facility. So that's the one thing that, you really worry about because you can't really control it.
Doug Bowles joining us, and you talk about kind of those challenges that are unknown. What are some of the challenges that are known that you guys have addressed this offseason at IMS?
Well, I think one of them, traffic last year, we had some problems with traffic, and we actually, during the event last year, we put a lot of drones up. We had a helicopter up. We took a ton of pictures, which was great because we could figure out where some of those traffic problems were. So I think we've made some changes that are going to make that better. So that's one of the things that I think we've made better. Well, last year was the first year where we had our open gate metal detector systems, which allows fans to come in and carry your cooler, and it can tell if you've got a beer in there or if you've got something you shouldn't bring in. So we've purchased some more of those. We've got some technology upgrades that I think they'll make those better. Actually, made our gates faster, which at first I was concerned that it wouldn't, but it got people through the gates faster. So we've changed that a little bit. We've added some new video boards, especially the GA customer who's watching from the infield, to give them a better chance to race. So we've done things like that. But, you know, the traffic and the gates are the two that you're always trying to make it better. You want to make it as easy as possible. And, you know, people don't like to wait. But then when they don't like to wait, they think, well, look, I just got in here, so easy, but nobody's here. Right? So it's a balance. When you put 330,000 people in one location, we're the second largest city in the state of Indiana inside the racetrack, and everybody wants to get there at the same time and leave at the same time, you're always going to have traffic problems.
Right. Absolutely. In terms of this year's event in particular, is there anything that maybe will be unique that people haven't been accustomed to?
I don't know if it's they haven't been accustomed to, but as the NTT IndyCar Series has been thinking about moving their power plant to a hybrid power plant, they've been working on this hybrid engine, and it's actually going to be deployed in June this year. But when they had to do it, the cars were heavier. So what they did is they ended up taking components to lighten them up. But since we're not used, we are still using some of those lighter components. So the cars are about 30 pounds lighter, which means they should be faster. Last year, Alex Palou had laps over 235 miles an hour. So the question is, could you see 236? Could you see Ari Leyendijk's 237? That's what I'm excited to see. Can we go faster than we've ever been maybe even faster than we've ever been when we went in 1996?
How does IndyCar feel about that record potentially being broken? Is that something they're okay with? I know there's a lot of safety involved, and safety's improved considerably since then.
So when you tell people, well, how come they were faster 30 years ago, it's not that we can't be. We want to do it in a safe way, so we've kind of limited the ability to get there. You know, I think the cars are safer than they've ever been, certainly for the drivers. We had a little wheel incident last year that we've addressed with the car itself, which I think will eliminate that problem happening. So, and I think we've done it in a way that it's just really minimal, and it's not crazy. So several years ago, as we led into 2016, we had this idea, let's break the track record for the 100th running. And so we changed some rules, and I don't know if you all remember, I think in 2015 we started literally flying cars. They got upside down, and we ended up stopping that direction. And we were trying to go too fast without thinking through the consequences if things went wrong. So I think we're in a good spot from a safety standpoint to do that. I don't think IndyCar minds. As a promoter, I'd love to break Ari's four-lap track record and let his single-lap track record stand. That way you kind of have that connection to the history, but we'll see what happens.
I know the museum is under a major renovation, and I know plenty of people love to come there in the month of May, but can you give us an update on that? I know it's kind of a separate entity, but a huge part of the month of May and all year round, and it's going to be pretty cool when it gets done.
It is. It's kind of weird. So it closed about 6 months ago, and so we've got about another year before it opens back up, so it's really odd not having the museum open. So the museum is a 501c3 not-for-profit, and it's something that's early 2000s, and they've raised a bunch of money, and they're going to redo it all, and I'm excited. At first, I was a little unsure, and now I'm pretty excited about it. I've seen it. I got a chance to walk through it. I do these things called Behind the Bricks, which are these little video things that I do, and I got a chance to walk through it and see a lot of what it's going to be. I think it's going to be, for those of us that love the cars for their history, we're going to feel like it's really respectful, but it also adds a little bit of an element where you're interactive, you're going to be able to engage younger people, or you're going to be able to engage somebody that may not be a car fan at all. So I think for those of us that love cars, we're still going to be able to celebrate the cars we love, but also bring our friends and family that may not care about cars at all and get them engaged. So I'm really excited about it. Hopefully it'll open in April of next year, certainly by May, but I'd love to have it open by April of next year. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Doug, before we let you go, obviously the big storyline for IndyCar going into the final, Larson's participation, that's helping drive ticket sales. He had a great open test. Where would you kind of grade where he's at in this process?
I think for somebody, so really if you think about the last few years, you had Kurt Busch and Fernando Alonso come over from Formula One to run the Indy 500. I think Kyle's probably better prepared than those two, you know, by two or three times. I mean, he's gone about it really methodically. He may be one of the best race car drivers on the planet at the moment, and he's with a really good team. They made the announcement a year ago. They've done some testing leading up to it. He had a great open test when he was there. I think he's approaching it the right way. He's obviously super fast. He's with a great team with some great teammates, which will help him. You know, I think he legitimately has a chance to win the Indianapolis 500. The promoter in me is like, okay, I'd love him to be up front until about five laps to go, and then, And then I want him just to fade. I don't want anything bad to happen to him. I just, you know, I want him to finish 10th, 11th, 12th, some regular skip. But having him run the 500 and especially run and be competitive is great for our sport. It's great for the Indy 500. I think you'll get NASCAR fans that maybe knew the Indy 500 existed but have never seen it will tune in, and I think that that's good for all of us. So I'm excited about it. And Kyle, if you live in Indiana and you're a short track fan, you've seen Kyle Larson race somewhere near you, right? I mean, he's raced all over Indiana on all our short tracks that we have here. So we kind of feel like he's sort of an adopted son for us. So I'm excited about that. He loves motorsport. You know, he won the BC 39 at our place on the little dirt track there. He was good at Gas City and Montpelier. You know, think about tracks that are up and around here. You know, he's just a great race car driver. It's going to be fun to have him.
Is there one driver, take the promoter thing out of it. Doug Bowles said, if this driver ever competes at the Indianapolis 500, that would be incredible.
Well, it would have been Jeff Gordon before Jeff Gordon retired, right? I mean, Jeff, just because of his Hoosier connections and his success at the Brickyard and just his overall popularity. I mean, having him run the Indy 500 would be huge. Somebody like a Lewis Hamilton, if Lewis Hamilton said, hey, I'm going to come run the Indy 500, that'd be massive. If Dale Earnhardt Jr., you know, he runs two or three races a year now, if all of a sudden he said, I'm going to run the Indy 500, it really, to me, you know, I want everybody to come run the Indy 500. Those are the ones that would make a huge difference. It'll be interesting to see if Kyle Busch has always said he'd want to run. He's just never found the right opportunity. So it'd be fun to have some of those guys. I think NASCAR drivers coming and running is great. I'd love to see one of our guys get a chance to go run the Daytona 500. So I know Connor Daly ran it last year, but could Joseph Newgarden or Will Power or one of those folks with Roger get a chance to do that? I'd love to see some folks figure out how can I run the Indy 500 and the Brickyard 400, you know, and just have some fun with that promotion.
Well, and we saw how close Kyle Busch was, what, a year or two ago,
yep,
of getting the seat that ultimately went to Kyle Larson,
yep,
with the other Kyle. Well, Doug, thanks so much for coming on with us here on New Track Record. Obviously, very busy time for you. Go inside, go warm up. It's cold out.
They're doing IndyCar Indianapolis Motor Speedway trivia in there, so I'm gonna go back in there. But this has been fun. What a great place this is. What a great city it is. And for us to be able to come up here and, you know, bring the truck and the pace car and the Indy car and the Borg Warner Trophy, it's pretty special. I'm sure this is something we'll do again next year.
Absolutely appreciate it. And thanks for coming on.
No problem. We'll see you guys in 31 days.
That's right. All right. That's Doug Bowles joining us, and we move on to the mailbag. So we had too many entries this week, so we just did rate the race. So we get to news and notes. So again, we appreciate all entries, but to keep things rolling, we couldn't get to all. It was too much. It was way too much.
But it's good. It's good. We enjoy
it. It's very good.
For sure.
So we go to news and notes. We start with things we may have missed from the Marshall Pruitt mailbag. And this week, a great week of content. Pruitt saying about David Malukas, he's saying, you know, he opened the car for the 500. Be a great way for him to return, but he said he's putting his money on Callum Ilott. And then obviously Porcher, depends on what he does this weekend at Barber, could be the Road and Street Course solution. Ilott as well, in terms of when he's not busy with his sports car commitments, right, in WEC. Good news on charters. Pruitt said, I was told last weekend that IndyCar is coming to its senses and will not be charging for the charters. So, 25 charters, 22 leader circle spots. That makes the most sense to me.
Well, which, after that was proposed, the IndyCar team owners basically laughed him out of the room when they were trying to get him $1 a piece for him. So we knew that wasn't going to happen. But it seems like sanity is prevailing with the charters. You're seeing that, the buy-in going away. You're seeing what sounds like the guaranteed entries for the 500 going away. And so IndyCar seems to be making the right decisions in terms of what that charter system is going to look like. And we'll see just, who maybe are the first takers to sell or buy into this 25. I think it adds a element to the series that we see in NASCAR and Formula One that make things really interesting. I mean, say what you want about Formula One and shutting other teams out, but man, it makes for some high drama for sure behind the scenes. And don't we love high drama? We're getting some of it this week, and by gosh, you and I love it.
This marketing fail story on the mailbag, page 4, racer.com mailbag.
Oh man,
we're not going to go into all the details and read you the whole thing, but essentially, an influencer who has a combined 36 million followers across YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram.
36 million
reached
people
reached out to IndyCar not once, not twice, but thrice, and couldn't get in touch. And
nobody responded to him.
No one responded. He goes to IMSA. Gets
41 minutes.
41 minutes.
Gets a response.
A collaboration, and all the kids following it. I mean, it's so disappointing, right?
It's standard for IndyCar, it seems like, right? Here's the thing. It's not for you. It's not for me. It's not for the older generation of people or the demographics that maybe most listen to this podcast. Hopefully some younger people. But this is a way 36 million influencers or people listen to this influencer. As a guy with a 14-year-old kid, I understand that these influencers have so much pull on these kids or the young adults that watch them. And you have to, that would be 36 million people that otherwise, probably the majority of them are not paying attention to IndyCar, all of a sudden watching things at Long Beach. And a huge opportunity goes by the wayside for IndyCar. And these are the type of things that, this is to silver platter. They don't have to do anything. All they have to do is give approval to this guy around and
give him
a
credential. That's it. He creates the content.
And a swing and a miss for IndyCar. It's these things. I know some people are like, what's it matter? But this is a dude that has 36 people that are subscribed to content. And you don't have to do a damn thing. He creates the content, as you said. And you don't respond to him. It's just, it's embarrassing. And we talk about their jobs at Team Penske this week. Somebody should lose their job for not following up with that guy. I mean, come on.
It's just a marketing fail, and it's disappointing, and I don't really know what else to say.
Just the latest of many, it seems.
Other news and notes items. Jackie Stewart at Long Beach is pretty cool. He said it was the first time he'd been there for the IndyCar race. Is
really?
Right? I think I heard that, which is hard
to believe. Yeah, I mean, he would have been there for the Formula One race, I would imagine. I
believe so. The KV Racing Vintage, which is kind of funny. I wouldn't consider it vintage, but it was the DP01 from, 2007 or whatever. It crashed.
I did see that. At least it's not the pace car crashing. Or maybe that's worse.
Zach Brown. It's been tapped to help IndyCar improve their marketing.
He had a fascinating. It was almost like it sounded like Marshall Pruitt, I think, wrote the article, asked him, like, okay, finally, like, what are the things you would do? And he just went on like a 5-minute rant.
Oh, yeah.
A 10-minute rant.
There's great stuff in there. I mean, we're not going to touch on every single point, but he's in favor of doubleheaders. I don't think they're adding really a lot of value.
I don't think in a perfect world IndyCar wouldn't have any doubleheaders, but they need to fill the schedule somehow.
Proper podiums. We've talked about that post-thermal.
Mickey Mouse podium.
With the podium at thermal.
Everywhere. It just feels like the podiums just lack.
The strategy projections, right, that F1 has, like in two laps, you know, X is going to pass driver Y, that kind of stuff.
I mean, that's what I was hoping for. At once, you know, you go back to Long Beach, and it's just something missing. You can compare, or you can talk about how this driver has the advantage over this driver based on strategy, but break it down. Like, how long can they go on the greens until they start falling off and projecting that? Or how much longer can you go on the primaries and not lose picks? Like, those kind of things is like, I still feel like NBC just treats us all like idiots. Like, it's our first race that we're watching. And I wish it was a next level element to the analysis that is brought into the broadcasts that we see in Formula One broadcasts.
And then the other thing I want to touch on, there are a few others, but he said we need to make sure that we focus on quality over quantity in terms of car count. He said, I think the NASCAR show is no worse off by having a smaller car count than the magical. You have to have 43 cars. I know we both agree on that. Don't need 29 cars is absurd. You have 25 solid entries that are well-funded, that's better than 29 with 4, 5, 6 field fillers.
And just look at the news that came out today with Dale Coyne Racing. And they're putting in, what is his name? Luca
Giotto.
Giotto?
Now, he's a really respected F2 driver, to be clear.
But from several years ago. He finished third in 2019 in F2. Since then, he's been bouncing. He's the sim driver for who? Formula E sim driver.
Yeah.
The dude's not even racing anyway. And he's getting in the seat this week. It's harsh. I get it. But why are so many people going to bat to protect the team owners when they're not bringing anything to the series other than field fillers. We don't need 27, 29 cars in this series when several of them are just field fillers and several teams are field fillers. What are we doing? Why are we protecting Coyne? I don't care how long he's been in the series. And Dale Coyne, great guy. Like, I get it. But what are they bringing to the series? Nothing. They're not competitive cars.
No.
We go over the moon if they finish in the top 15 at any point. Same with a couple other teams. So Zach Brown was cordial enough not to mention particular teams. I'm not cordial enough not to say individual teams. We all know who those teams are. They bring nothing to the series, and I'm not going to defend them. I'm not going to look at it and say, oh, we have to protect these teams. Because similar to we're talking about David Malukas' situation, is auto racing is ruthless. And if you're not fully committed to competing, then what are you doing? Especially when you have teams like particularly Prima that seems to want to jump in the deep end and heavily invest and want to be competitors, as opposed to just taking the biggest check and putting unproven, unqualified guys in seats.
Speaking of Prima, there's a rumor out there that Mick Schumacher, this is from a couple weeks back, Mick Schumacher could be
Let's go.
One of the drivers that Prima is interested in, which would be a fascinating entry if you throw in, you know, another top thought of IndyCar driver, which is what they want to do. I mean, that would be a fascinating.
Remember in the day and people said, well, we don't want F1 washouts. And now you look across IndyCar and you have some of the top drivers as quote unquote Formula One washouts. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, I have no problem.
I mean, when's the last Formula One driver that former Formula One driver that came over and just completely washed, disappointed in IndyCar? I mean, I'm trying to, like, rack my brain.
Roman Grosjean, I guess you could argue, is debatable.
No, but I don't think they were expectations on him that were through the roof.
No, certainly not. He's shown well. It's just a matter of putting it
all
together.
And he's done well for Juncos. I mean, the weekend they had last weekend was
P8.
Good.
He had a solid race.
But I think somebody that's completely come over and just completely tanked, you'd have to go back a while.
You got to go back to, like, the Conquest and, you know, like,
yeah, I mean, recently the last 5, 6, 7 guys have come over that have been "quote unquote" F1 washouts have been decent at worst in IndyCar.
Speaking of IMS, race day parking, race weekend camping sold out 3 weeks ahead of last year's pace. We talked about ticket sales and gave an update there. All right, we might have one or two. Actually, no, we're ready. So tweets of the week, we have a ton.
Yes.
So we save the mailbag. We're getting too cluttered because a lot of you sent incredible tweets. We start with CJ9. Here's the question, though. Is this the villain IndyCar needs or the kind IndyCar deserves?
Talking about Team Penske.
This from Lynn_IndyCar. Justin won an amazing drive by that 45-year-old Scott Dixon. He took these young kids to school again. That is 4 wins out of the last 6 races. 3rd place in top 10. Hashtag drive for 7. Nick J. Fletcher sent us a meme, Boost Bros, instead of Bus Bros, with Scotty Mack and Joseph. Excellent. Freydens89, is there any way we could review the results from a race run 21 years ago? Paul Tracy. Brady BC3, oh boy, now he isn't going to follow you. That in reply to us.
That was a great tweet by you, by the way.
I just tweeted Bump, and it was Joseph Newgarden's now infamous July 28, 2022 tweet, it's Joseph, with his name spelled correctly, at Penske, we care about details. That's aged poorly.
Do you care about the details at Penske now?
Yeah.
Apparently not.
500 Indy 1911, ready to take your Dixon comments from After Thermal.
I deserve those.
And then this one from Ryan Eversley, of course, Dinner with Racers. One of the most memorable moments in Dinner with Racers history for me was when we interviewed Scott Dixon. I made the joke that his engineer probably deserves some credit for his fuel saving. He went from smirking and being playful to extremely serious and said, no, that's me.
That's all me.
And that's not even the best one, because, of course, as always, we save the best for last on these. And it's Pato Award. Let me know if you need my address to send over the hardware, Joseph Newgarden.
Yeah, get that trophy over to Pato Award. Honorable mention was the one that, was it Was it Nashville that put out today?
Yes. Oh, yeah. They must have deleted that one.
Oh, too bad, because that was good. I'm surprised it made a Twitter to begin with, but it was basically, all it was at Jay Fry.
You okay?
You okay? Question mark.
I think, unfortunately, that one was deleted.
But it was not deleted in time
for us to not notice it. Not forget about it.
It was good.
All right, so that's a look at Tweets of the Week. One other quick note, good news for George Phillips of Oil Pressure Blog. Scans all clear for his wife, so excellent news there indeed.
Great news.
Great news, and no random split error driver of the week.
No, we have plenty of other stuff to get to.
We'll get back to it next week.
Full disclosure, we're trying to get out of here and watch the NFL draft. But
and this event is also wrapping
up. Yes, we also need to get out of here, and it's cold. So
it is cold.
We appreciate everybody that came out and visited us today. Thanks to Doug Bowles as well. It's race weekend. Let's get back at it. And plenty of drama to happen both on and off the track this weekend, I imagine.
All right, that does it for us for now. We'll be back next week to recap the Children's of Alabama Indy Grand Prix at Barber Motorsports Park. So we'll be back next week to recap that. Also inside, so we won't be cold.
I'm
like shivering now. My coat's in the car. So that does it for us for Justin Kinney. Again, thanks to Jug Bowles. I'm Caleb Hatch. This has been New Track Record Podcast.
Podcasts by Federated Media.